everybody. This is Brad with the United Way of Columbia and Greene Counties. You are listening to WGXC ACRA, Columbia and Greene Counties, 90.7 on the dial.
The Catskill Food Pantry is located in the Parish Hall of St. Luke's Episcopal Church at 50 William Street in Catskill. The pantry is open to the public every Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Healthy food is a right. For more information, please feel welcome to visit the pantry. Call us at 551-299-2456. Check the website at catskillfoodpantry.org or connect with us on Facebook at Catskill Food Pantry.
The Wave Farm app is now in the App Store for users to download. It's only available on iPhones and iPads. An Android version of the app will be developed as soon as funding allows. The Wave Farm app allows users to listen to live audio from any of the Wave Farm web streams, including WGXC 90.7 FM, Standing Wave Radio, which was formerly known as Wave Farm Radio, Quintron's Weather Warlock, Zach Poff's Pond Station, and other partner streams. Users may also create custom playlists from the thousands of archived audio files. Wave Farm transmit partners and WGXC broadcast partners may now also stream their own audio feeds from their iPhones and iPads using the app. Again, you can go into the App Store and search for Wave Farm Radio.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Brouwer Propulsion Laboratory in Brooklyn, New York. WGXC local business supporters help us continue to be a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Thank you, Brouwer Propulsion Laboratory.
Welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda here on WGXC 90.7 FM. We are a twice-a-month movie talk show. Today, usually I'm here with my co-host Amanda. I'm Jenny. However, I have a very special guest on. I have my good friend, Andy Overton. Andy, you want to say hi?
Meowdy.
Oh, meowdy. Meowdy from Andy here, yeah. In the beautiful village of Catskill. So longtime listeners of our show will know we usually pick a theme and talk about movies related to that theme for the next hour. However, we always start by reading the local showtimes. And I'm going to start by telling you about what's playing in Chatham at the Crandall Theater. We have coming up, there's the Crandall Open House Reception, which is mysterious and exciting, and I would recommend researching what that means. We also have playing, for movies, that is, Picasso, A Rebel in Paris, Sunset Boulevard, My Penguin Friend, The Cowboy and the Queen, Double Indemnity, 20 Feet from Stardom, Inheritance, and How to Come Alive with Norman Mailer. And if you're interested in any of those movies or their specific showtimes, I would strongly suggest heading over to crandalltheater.org to find out more information. I'm going to hand it over to Andy to tell us what's playing at the next theater.
At the Spotlight Theater in Hudson, you'll find Speak No Evil. You'll also find The Killer's Game, as well as Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, and The Front Room, and Afraid, Afraid AI'd, and Reagan, and Alien Romulus. It doesn't stop there, but it does end with Us is also there. Deadpool and Wolverine, Twisters, Inside Out 2.
Wow, there's a lot still playing there. That was at Spotlight?
All about that Spotlight.
Gorgeous. Wow, wow, wow. Thrilling. There, I mean, it's been a big movie summer, as every summer is. But, you know, we're living a beautiful world here. All right, now I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Upstate Films locations, starting with the Star Cinema, which is the location in Rhinebeck. We have Raising Arizona, Good One, A Serious Man, Sugar Cane, Why This Election is the Most Important of This Geologic Era, long title, Plastic People, Johnny Guitar, War Game, Close Your Eyes, and Sing Sing. Lot to see. And then heading over to the Orpheum Theater, which is the location in Saugerties, we have A Serious Man, The Man Who Wasn't There, In a Lonely Place, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, War Game, Sing Sing, Between the Temples, Presidential Debate, not a movie, but an event, and then Public Forum re Winston Farm, probably also maybe an event. Don't know anything about that, but worth investigating. If you're interested in any of these movies or any of the other things happening at the Upstate Cinemas or at the Upstate Films locations, head on over to upstatefilms.org for more information. Now I'm going to hand it over to Andy again. Are you ready?
I'm already at the Wyndham.
You live over there.
I know. There's a difference between looking at it and saying it.
So true.
We have Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. We have Reagan. And God's Not Dead.
Oh.
We the People.
Interesting. It's one of those fake movies. But I'll say less about that here today. All right, and now I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Highway Drive-In, which is, I think, the only drive-in still open. It looks like the Greenville Drive-In's pretty much done for the season. However, huge news at the drive-in, the Highway Drive-In, that is, in Coxsackie. This weekend, it's Dead Till Dawn, baby.
Oh, my God.
My favorite time of year. It's just the best. Andy loves it. I love it. Amanda loves it. It's just the best. Strong recommendation if you're interested in old horror movies. Just incredible. So this weekend at the Highway Drive-In, screen one is Dead Till Dawn. Screen two is Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, and Trap. Screen three is Speak No Evil and Blink Twice. And screen four is Deadpool and Wolverine and Twisters. Really great stuff. And if you're interested in more information about any of those showtimes, you can go to highwaydrivein.com. That's H-I-W-A-Y, drivein.com. Do you have another one?
I have Story Screen.
Tell me about Story Screen,
now
please.
Now playing at Story Screen, again, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Yep.
Strange Darling.
Ooh.
The Front Room. Sing Sing. Good One. That's what I can see.
That's plenty. That's a lot. I'm hoping to see Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice at Story Screen Cinema myself.
Yes.
Hopefully this week. Yeah. See, anything's possible. And then last but not least, the last theater on my list, I'm going to tell you about what's playing at TSL, otherwise known as Time and Space Limited in Hudson. We have this weekend, or this week and this weekend, Sing Sing, Merchant Ivory, The Cowboy and the Queen, my first film by local director Zia Anger,
yes.
War Game, Dance First, and I think that's it. Oh, I'm so sorry. There is actually also a movie about Werner Herzog called Radical Dreamer. And if you're interested in any of those movies or their showtimes or any of the other things that are happening at TSL, as there are always many things happening at TSL, you can find out more information at timeandspace.org. I think that wraps it up for us in terms of local showtimes. There's a lot to see.
There's a lot to see.
It's crazy. I mean, Amanda and I say this every time, too. It's just like, movies are coming out every week that I've never heard of. And I like to think of myself as somebody who's kind of got their finger on the pulse of what's going on with movies. But, you know, they just keep making more. They never stop.
I feel like also some of the ones that are in theaters now have been in theaters most of the summer. So you're
totally.
Like, there's still an opportunity to see Twisters.
It's not too late.
Which I feel like came out so long ago.
It does. It feels like an eternity. I do like a thing that I miss about like being a kid and a teenager is that movies I feel like stayed in the theater a lot longer. And now these days it feels like they come and go really fast, which is kind of a bummer because sometimes when you want to see something but you're really busy, you don't have a chance to. So it's nice when things like Twisters get to stick around all summer, in case you want to see it again.
Hard agree.
Yeah. All right. So you're listening to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. What we do here is we pick a movie theme, and then usually it's me and Amanda, but today it's me and Andy, and we watch movies surrounding that theme, but we don't tell each other about them. And then we get on air and we talk about what we watched and we reveal what we were thinking about and what we were watching for the last 2 weeks. So we decided, we were actually going to be doing the show with our other friend Danielle as well. Tragically, she was not able to be here today because of work reasons. But the three of us together cooked up, I think really the two of you cooked up the concept, the theme this week, which is the fair.
Yeah, I mean, we're all solid members of the corndog committee.
Yes.
And I think when fair season comes around, we hear the call real loud.
We must attend.
And we must answer.
If you ignore the call, something's gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You have to hear it. So we decided to watch movies surrounding, you know, county fairs, state fairs. I must admit, I leaned weirder. I had a hard time finding movies about county and state fairs because it feels like something that I really like about it as a concept is that it feels, it's very American.
Mm-hmm.
It's very like summer, obviously. The fair usually takes place in the summertime, usually towards the end because it's kind of like pivoting into harvest season, mm-hmm. which is something that's very beautiful about the fair. One of the things we love is that it's kind of that last little bookend. It's still warm out, but summer's coming to a close, and you're going to see a bunch of cars smash into each other. You're going to watch somebody maybe ride a horse, depending on where in the world you live. You're going to eat a corn dog. Maybe you're going to eat some funnel cake, if you're really lucky. You're going to maybe ride a ride.
I mean, it also makes sense with the animal season. Like,
yes.
The pumpkins are ready to harvest, and the little lambs are old enough to now be, like, trotting around a little show ring.
Show them off
those little lambs.
There's
so many reasons I think the fair happens exactly when it needs to happen.
It's perfect. And so for me, I find that when I was researching this theme, there are a lot of movies that have like a scene or two that take place at the fair because it's kind of a like quintessential summertime experience. And again, especially for like Americans. And rural Americans, really. Like, it has a, it's kind of, it's a very, a lot of things are happening then. There's a lot of summer romance is coming to an end, maybe. People are smoking weed behind a tent because they're teenagers and they're, like, getting into trouble. That happened in two of the movies that I watched. It's very, like, you know, teens getting away from the adults and, like, having a fun time with each other. But not a lot of movies use it as, like, the entire set. It's
mm-hmm.
usually just, like, a piece of the puzzle. And so, for me, the reason that I leaned more carnival circuit, well, more carnival, really, is that, like, that feels adjacent to fair and that it's also traveling temporary event that brings an entire, usually very small town together. Where everyone you know is going to be there, which always happens to me at the Columbia County Fair. I go and I see a ton of people I know. It's so funny.
And it also brings with it the cast of, like, carnies,
yes.
kind of, for lack of a better word, but also, like, there's the county fair circuit.
Totally.
So you're, like, combining, like, you're smashing, like, a hyper-local crowd with, like, a hyper-coming-through
totally.
Crowd that also comes through every year.
Yeah.
It is a real big mash together.
It's fascinating. It's a fascinating, like, microcosm of society,
yeah.
where it's like, you know, the fair is not forever. You're seeing people that you do see every day, but in a different context. And then, yes, like you say, like, you see these people who come through temporarily, but you might see them again next year because
mm-hmm.
they're on the circuit. They will be at the 4-H tent again. Don't you forget it.
What I also love about carnival as being kind of the intermediate is that I feel like in some ways circus is canceled. Maybe that's a little hot take
but do you mean like because of the animals?
Well, just like, yeah, like generally, like, the circus is kind of, we go to the circus less than I think previous generations have, but we still have the fair.
So
and the
true.
Fair is still like local and freak all in one.
Yeah.
And that gives me some of what like the better parts of the circus used to give me.
Yeah. I think you're really right about that.
So I'm happy Carnival is here with us in the room.
Yeah, totally. Carnival is in the room. I like, fair, yeah. Fair is here. Fair is an umbrella. And I think Carnival sometimes falls under the umbrella.
Yes. One of my movies is solidly fair as, like, scene of movie vibe setting,
yes,
and also scene of the movie. But my other movie is more ride, thrill,
fun.
That element of fair,
yeah,
and less, like, conceptually,
yeah,
about the fair.
I have a guess.
Okay.
But
I wonder if you're right.
Do you want to start?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, tell me about something that you watched, Andy.
I don't know which one I wanted to start with. I want to talk more about my second movie, so
yeah,
I'm actually going to start with the other one,
yeah,
so
yeah,
that we can kind of, I think you'll be very happy for me. I have finally dipped my toes into the Final Destination series.
I was like, did you watch Final Destination 3?
I sure did.
Yes, bro. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time.
I'm so glad.
I am so sorry to people who don't like gory films, because that is, like, most of its magic.
It's the Final Destination franchise is so fun. It's really, like, I actually recently watched the last one. There's five of them.
Yes.
And I won't say what happens in it, but, like, it was just such a satisfying. It's crazy that a movie series that's based entirely on, like, Rube Goldberg style murders is just so fun and can last that long and hit every time. Like, it's,
yeah,
just, it's so fun.
Was the fifth one always meant to be the last one?
I don't know, but it has an incredible ending,
yeah,
that I was stunned by and shocked by how great it was.
Okay, well, I learned about Final Destination 3 that it actually had an alt ending that didn't,
ooh,
like, go well with the first screeners,
ooh,
or whatever, and
yeah,
they filmed another ending,
oh,
for
fascinating,
it.
Fascinating.
I don't know what the culture is on spoilers for a movie that's been out for nearly 20 years.
So, Amanda and I usually opt to spoil things because I think generally we come from the same, like, experience that it's not necessarily knowing what happens in the movie. It's like, it's watching it and experiencing it for yourself that kind of matters.
Mm-hmm.
And also, yeah, Final Destination 3 came out in, like, what, 2013
2006.
Yeah, it's older than that. Yeah.
It's like, and I can explain the way you get to see somebody's head, like, sliced off with a rotating disc, but until
it's
you see it, you
yeah,
can't say you've seen it.
It's also like, I am lucky to have a memory that does not last long, so you can tell me exactly what happened and I'm going to forget.
Oh my God. The deaths were just, they're so good. Each one is better than the last one.
They're really good at building,
yes,
in that way. Will you give us not necessarily a summary of the entire movie, but just kind of walk us through
right.
the plot of Final Destination for, you know, those of our audience who maybe aren't familiar with the franchise?
Totally. My pleasure. The Final Destination series are sort of predicated on death follows you and, like, will, and please help jump me in because I'm never a great summarizer,
you're
but
perfect,
death will come for you.
Mm-hmm.
So each of the movies are different and they have a different cast, so they can kind of, like, operate as separate, sort of, like, we can pretend that these characters don't already know about the precedent of death following you, but it'll be like a traumatic event. People will die and some people won't die maybe, but then death will ultimately follow them and come for them throughout the course of the movie.
Right.
And so in this one, there is an initial scene, which is at an amusement park, not a fair, but it's
pretty
rides.
Close, yeah.
And the main character, whose name is Wendy, maybe?
Something. I know it's Elizabeth Mary Winstead.
I printed
actress.
Out my little notes, but I don't want to shuffle my little sheaf of papers here.
I think that might add some nice ASMR, actually,
okay,
if you want to bring a little.
I do have a little sheaf of papers. That's
a great sound effect for me, personally.
I don't know how fast it'll be for me to
you're
find
doing
the
great
cast. Although, yes, Mary Elizabeth Winstead is Wendy Christensen.
Very
her name
good.
Is Wendy.
Beautiful.
So she kind of, like, she has a premonition while she's waiting in line for a roller coaster
mm-hmm.
ride that there's going to be, like, an accident where, like, a camera basically falls onto the rails and, like, derails the roller coaster
carts or whatever, yeah.
And people will die. And she successfully convinces some handful of her friends to get off the ride, but she cannot convince everybody. So she survives, and then the rest of the movie is her and one of their other friends who survives, like, kind of, like, figuring out that they're going to all be chased down by
yeah.
death. She has taken photos of the whole day, so she's got kind of, like, She is simultaneously looking at photos of each person who was there for evidence about, like, their ultimate cause of death.
Yes.
And she keeps, like, they both are catching up with the people as they're being killed in turn, sort of, because death will go in order. But if you get saved, you get skipped, kind of.
Yeah, totally.
And I won't tell you the ending, because I've already said it's been it was, like, reshot.
Yeah,
but,
totally.
Like, I was looking into the production and the effects of it, because honestly, that was kind of one thing I was struck by watching it, is that they actually hold up pretty well for being early aughts effects, and differently than the other movie I watched, which I will also tell you about later, but this one's more recent, and it involves more CGI, but it's still kind of in that sweet spot of, like, it's not obvious.
Yes.
And it enhances the practical effects. Like, they did shoot at a real roller coaster,
totally.
But they also made a bunch of fake cars that were, like, certainly rigged for certain things or whatever. Like, they did a kind of a mashup, and they hold up. Those effects are still really cool. Oh,
that's always my favorite thing about, honestly, it is kind of that sweet spot between, honestly, I always think of it as, like, Jurassic Park as being the first bookend, and then, yeah, like, the mid to late aughts being, like, the back bookend of when CGI wasn't that good yet, and so we didn't rely on it as much. It was just a tool used to enhance practical effects, like you said, and it just feels like there are more cinematic tools being used to kind of hide it in this way that makes it more believable and more fun to watch, so that even if the effects aren't necessarily, like, as quote-unquote good as modern effects, it works so much better because it's being used in this much more thoughtful way instead of being used as a crutch.
Totally.
And I just, oh, God. I haven't watched Final Destination 3 in a second, and I'm like, this is so exciting. I can't wait to go home and watch it.
There's also a difference between the way that they employ shots that are based around practical things that are going to get added to, and the way that they create full scenes,
absolutely,
shots, whatever, from scratch. And, like, the angles are different. The, like, it's just so different, and it's more, I think it's more quote-unquote immersive these days, because, like, things really come at you on the screen and, like, whoosh past you and stuff, but, like, it actually is so much more enveloping as a, like, movie piece when you're watching, like, the effects kind of contained within the frame of the set.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I'm saying this very well,
no,
but
I think you're right. I absolutely agree. Like, calling it immersive in the sense that, like, I've been thinking about this a lot. I talked about this on our last show a little bit, how I was talking about Alien Romulus and how that movie feels a lot like a video game, and I meant that negatively, where, like, a lot of modern CGI feels like you are being put into this world, but there's no actual environment. It's all CGI. So it just feels like, although it is more immersive in a sense, it also feels less like you're watching a movie, and, like, less like an art piece in that way. Which, I don't know, there's something to me about losing yourself in this world, but, like, still having something real to, like, anchor yourself to it.
Absolutely.
Whereas, like, the full CGI stuff just feels like, yeah, I don't know, I'm, like, watching a screensaver. Like, like, I'm in it, but I'm not, there's nothing real about it at all. Like, wearing, like, VR glasses, you know, which is, for some people, very fun.
And I think for some movies it can work just fine.
Totally.
Like, for things like, I don't know, Godzilla or whatever, where it's, like, we know this isn't real. But, like, when you're watching, like, comedy horror, it's kind of like, I want that to feel a little more real than,
like, I
need,
like, a splatter, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, put me in the splash zone. 100%. Yeah, I'm 100% with you.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So fun.
I need to see the other ones still, but I was pleased to see that number 3 had it was, like, one of the best received, even for being a trequel.
A trequel.
And I was like, you never see that.
No, it's really, to me, 1, 3, and 5 are the best.
Okay.
A weird way to go.
One, two, three, and five
are all fun.
Okay.
4 is not very good.
I'm learning that 4 is maybe not
four
your
is not
favorite.
Very good. 4 is, like, okay, so actually, to what we're saying, so for those of you who aren't familiar with the Final Destination franchise, as Andy said, each one starts with, like, an accident, basically, and all of the characters die, except for a couple who figure out that something's going on. So like, the first one is a plane. The second one is a, like, highway accident. The third one is a roller coaster. The fourth one is, like, a racetrack with cars, and it's where they started using CGI too heavily.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's a lot of really goofy, like, it's very clearly a movie that was marketed as, like, a 3D movie when it came out, because, like, very like during the initial accident, a big tire comes at the screen, and it's like whoa, do I duck under the tire? But it really doesn't hit,
yeah,
because it's just not, it's not very good. It's so goofy, and it's just it just is kind of the weak point of the franchise. And five is totally fun because it's a return to the same as the first three, mm-hmm. and then it has a great ending.
Do you know if the plane that they reference in number three is the plane from number one?
I think it probably is, but don't remember.
I think it's one of the ways in which they've weaved the worlds together, but still allow them to be separate.
Yeah, it's such a great, I love the concept of a franchise like this that is it's like a reoccurring concept, but yeah, totally different characters, like, they're all living in the same world, but they have nothing to do with each other. Mm-hmm. Just like such a fun way to do it, instead of having to try and like continue the same people's stories when it's like, no, their stories come to an end. We don't need to keep going.
Yeah. I also love even when series do like same universe, different cast of characters.
Absolutely.
Like it's kind of the same conceit, but like I love leaving an element the same mm-hmm. and then changing everything else about it.
It's so I mean, it's a great way to do it. It feels like it brings such fresh air to it, especially something like Final Destination, which is just set piece after set piece of, again, Rube Goldberg-esque, like, disasters where something goes very wrong.
But it has such a thin undercurrent of, like, no, like, you can think a little bit more about this if you want to.
Yeah, totally.
The Easter eggs are there.
Exactly.
If you want to.
Yeah, it's so fun. I love, it's like one of those things where you love to watch it and be like, oh, that kettle sure is whistling very hot. Is something going to happen there? And it's like, oh, that was a red herring. It wasn't the kettle. It was actually the whatever, like the dangling phone cord is going to be the problem. It's just so fun.
I love it.
Oh, oh my God. I'm so glad you watched it. Should I tell you? I also watched, I basically watched two kind of like mid-tier horror movies and then one like really sweet, fun, not horror movie.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you, I'll tell you about one of the horror movies because I probably won't have time to talk about both. So I'll talk about the better of the two. I watched The Funhouse from 1981.
Oh my God, cool. Okay.
Which is a movie directed by Tobe Hooper, who directed the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Which is why
I watched it, because longtime fans of the show will know Amanda and I both love the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's a great movie. So The Funhouse is like very similar. It's a little bit less good, but it's very similarly like kind of a trashy, like kind of a nasty movie from 1981 that is, it's about a like group of teens who sneak out and go to the fair together. It's like it is more of a carnival, but it has a real county fair vibe because like people that they know are working there, and like there are definitely some quote unquote carnies who are just there, who come through every year, who none of them know. But so it's these two couples, and they're having a great time. They're smoking weed behind the tents. Like I said, they are getting into trouble. The main character, whose name? I don't recall. I'll look her up. She is like, she's the one who sneaks out. Her parents are like, don't go to that trashy carnival. And so she tells them that she goes to a movie instead. But she is not doing that. She goes out with her boyfriend to the fun house. her name is Amy. And her little brother, Joey, also sneaks out to the carnival. So he's, like, wandering around, too. It's, like, this fun kind of B-plot where he's, like, having a weird time at the carnival also while she's there with her boyfriend. However, she and her boyfriend and this other couple are like, what if we stayed in the funhouse overnight? Wouldn't that be so crazy? Which, to me, an adult, is like, that's insane. Why would you want to do that? I don't understand why a person would choose that. But they do. So they get into, like, the little cart that takes you into the funhouse. And then before it exits, they all jump out. And they're, like, hanging out in the funhouse all night as the carnival closes down. It's kind of a trashy movie. So they're, like, all making out. Like, basically having a great time. The carnival's closed up. No one's noticed that they're missing except her little brother, who's kind of watching from outside but doesn't really know what happened to them. He's kind of an accessory. He doesn't really actually have much to do with the story, unfortunately. He's just, like, kind of hanging out. But you think of him as somebody who's, like, maybe going to help them later. He does not. So
the younger brother never helps.
He's not helpful. He's very annoying. But so the four of them just having a fun time in the fun house. Then they hear from below a weird noise because they're like on this, Like it's a like when you go to the fair and there's the like a fun house, like where you walk in and it's kind of raised. They're up above what is what turns out to be like the apartment of one of the carnival workers.
Oh my gosh.
And so it's this guy who they've seen earlier who was walking around wearing a mask, like a Frankenstein mask and gloves. Mm. And he was looking really weird, but they're like, whatever, he's just a freaky guy. It's no big deal. But they hear a little noise. They stop what they're doing, look down. They see him in there with another person who also works at the carnival. And they have a little interaction where the guy in the mask takes off his mask and then murders her. And they watch this murder happen. Because it turns out, sorry, I'm like saying this in such a weird way. I have not really thought about the funhouse that much. The guy in the Frankenstein mask is actually like a bat boy type character. You know, like, you know, in like the Weekly World News tabloids that used to be at the grocery store would be like bat boy, half bat, half boy. You know what I'm talking about?
Sort of vaguely.
So it's basically like the idea is that this is a human child who's also like a mutant child, and he has like a bat face, and he's very wet. He's got a lot of mucus coming out. It's like a very, it's a really nasty movie. It's like, it's one of those movies where the plot, not that important, not that interesting. Visually, it's like actually really cool. Like it's very beautifully lit. It's such a, it's like, it almost has like a Technicolor vibe. Like everything's really vibrant and really exciting. And it's so nice to watch like kind of a B movie that today would be like, you know, sent straight to Netflix. No one would ever watch it. It's like kind of garbage, but it looks so good. Like movies just don't really look like that anymore. And so it's so nice to watch something like that where it's like, yes, this is kind of just, you know, dumb, like empty, visual, like kind of nastiness, but it looks so good. And it was just like very engaging the whole way through. Anyway, these teens witness this murder and they're like, uh-oh, what's going on? It's time for us to get out of the funhouse because this creepy bat guy is going to get us. So they try to get out. The funhouse is locked.
Obviously.
Why
I
wouldn't
could have
it
told
be?
You that.
It was so, I'm like, why did you, what are you guys doing?
Oh my God.
So then,
what, are they going to leave the funhouse unlocked all night?
Of course not. That would be crazy. Teens might sneak in. You couldn't do that. But so then the rest of the movie.
But nobody noticed when the last car went in with kids on it and came out without them?
Well, it was like the carnival worker like watches the empty car come out and goes like, I don't know. None of my business.
Oh, my God.
It's like very, very real. We're like, yeah, totally. He's like, I don't know. I wasn't paying attention.
They don't get paid enough.
Exactly. But so the rest of the movie is basically about these four teens trying to get out of the fun house without getting caught by
Bat Boy.
But it turns out, I mean, Bat Boy is a problem. He's violent. I have established that. He has committed a crime. However, his adoptive father also works at the carnival as like a, he's just like one of the like barkers, carnival barkers. Is that what they're called?
I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about. They're the people who say like, step right up. Come on up. See the world's weirdest mermaid.
Totally.
You know.
Totally.
He is also there. And he is like, I don't know. It's unclear. It's not made clear in the movie whether or not he's literally the Bat Boy's father or just has adopted him for some reason out of the goodness of his heart. But he's not a good man. So through context clues, maybe he is actually his literal father. But he finds out that this has happened. This murder has occurred. He tries to help the Bat Boy cover it up, but they find that their money's been stolen. And who stole it but one of the dirtbag teens on their way out. And so then it becomes this cat and mouse chase through the funhouse where the father...
They're still in the funhouse.
They can't get out. They're trapped.
How do they steal the money? Inside the funhouse?
So they, as they were trying to get out, one of the boys sneaks into the room where the woman was murdered because the Bat Boy is gone at this point. I can't remember where he goes. He goes somewhere else. And he like sees the little lockbox full of money and just like stuffs his pockets because he's a dirtbag.
Yeah.
I'm like, just get out.
Just
what are you doing?
Weed.
So they get, you know, they get caught. They get caught basically. And one by one, they're all eliminated. Something that's very fun about this movie is that the last scene is, it does have a final girl, which is very cute for 1981. Although, I mean, Texas Chainsaw also does, so it's not that big of a stretch. But the main character, Amy, who's the one with the little brother, she's the only, she makes it to the end. This is just my favorite part of the movie. There's the last scene that she like ends up in what is essentially the basement of the funhouse, which has, for some reason, a conveyor belt of chain all around like the ceiling of the room that's slowly turning, and hanging off of the chain is like 20 like hooks, like random like chains with hooks at the end hanging off of it. So like as you're watching the scene, it was actually genuinely pretty tense, where you're like watching her have a standoff with the Bat Boy, because everyone else is gone by that point. It's just the two of them, and she's really scared, but you're just in this environment where like this, there's this slowly rotating like chain with a bunch of hooks dangling from it, spinning all around the room, while you're watching her try and trying to figure out how to fight this guy who is like clearly has some kind of superhuman strength, and she's just trying to survive. That's all she wants to do is get out. She didn't even want to stay in there to begin with. Her dumb boyfriend suggested it.
Wow.
Yeah. It was very fun. It's like, it's a very weird movie. It's like very, it feels a perfect Dead Till Dawn movie as I was watching it. I was like, oh, this would be so good at the drive-in. So much fun to watch with friends. It's kind of packed with character actors. There's this really fun, the first half of the movie basically is just kind of, it's almost like episodic scenes of the carnival where these characters are like going to the different tents and seeing what's going on. And one of them is a like vampire magician, basically, who does like a little trick where he does like the basically sawing a woman in half trick. But it turns out to be his daughter, and like she hasn't actually been sawn in half. But the character is played by William Finley, who is the same actor who plays the Phantom of the Paradise, which is a movie that Amanda and I both love. And he's like a very recognizable person. So I was like, oh my God, he's here. Like, it just felt like it was such a fun, there's so many fun little scenes in it. Like the very beginning opens with like a Psycho homage where like the main character is, she's in the shower and like her little brother is like wearing a mask and like pretends to stab her with a knife, but he's just being an annoying little brother. It's just like a really fun, weird movie. Yeah, it's, I would say it's worth watching if you're into like yucky B movies.
Oh, I'm so into them. My question is about how much like fun home mirror visual stuff. Like how did they work that in? Was that like not much of the visual element? Like take me more into the actual fun home visuals.
I would say not enough. There is something that's very fun about the fun house. Something that's very fun about the fun house is that it is all like practical, like rubber people. Like there's no CGI really at all. At least none that I can detect. Like obviously it's the 80s, so things are different then, but it is very like there's a scene where Amy is, it feels like she's being chased but she's not sure, and it's like this really fun edit where it's being intercut like all of the different like creepy creatures that are in this funhouse. It's kind of like a haunted house more than like a hall of mirrors. There's more like big monster, rubbery monsters and like big scary faces, and like at one point they enter through a giant mouth. And so it's like she's like running, and the editing intercuts like an image of the big mouth, an image of the actual Bat Boy, who like you don't know if he's actually there, if she's just imagining that she's seeing him. And then like an image of like one of the creepy rubber monsters, and then like cobwebs and ghosts. And it's like, it's such a fun, it is like a very creepy setting. It's kind of more of a Halloween carnival movie than just a straight up and down summer. It doesn't really have like the summer flavor, unfortunately. It does have one of the things I really liked about it is the like teens goofing off like in the summertime, getting away from their family. But it doesn't have the other two movies that I watched both have a lot of like, we are at the carnival, we are seeing lots of people we know. This is very like, these people are strangers, they like happen to interact with these total lunatics in the fun house, and they just had the bad luck to decide to stay in the fun house overnight.
That was a choice.
It was a choice.
It's not luck, it's choice.
A bad choice. But yeah, that's the fun house.
Wow, that was a fun journey through the fun house.
Welcome.
Thinking about the county fairs, somewhere where you're seeing and being seen, leads me to my other movie.
Tell me.
Which I think you'll also be very excited that I have finally watched.
Oh my God.
From 1987, The Lost Boys.
Andy!
It's about time.
Frankly. I'm so glad. You watched great movies for this.
I did. And this one is really, it was like, it takes the fair element. Really, that's like the home of the movie, honestly.
Totally.
And like, I guess I'll summarize a little bit. But it's a movie about the mom, who's somebody that we know, but whose name I'm going to have to look up. You know her. You love her.
I'm like, who is the mom in The Lost Boys?
Oh, my God. That page.
I'm
going to
find
beautiful.
It so fast.
I'll have to go to the internet.
Is it Diane West?
Yes.
Diane West?
Yeah, she's the mom, and she drags her two little kids. Well, yes. One's not so little, and one is a little kid, to a new town. It's a fictional town, Santa Carla, California. I mean, it's filmed mostly in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And they, one of the first things they go to is the local fair. And
so fun.
They spend a long time there seeing and being seen. And one of my favorite moments is like this extended eye contact scene where the main character, whose name is
Michael,
thank you, locks eyes with the romantic interest star.
Yes.
And they have sustained eye contact for so long, it makes me a little uncomfortable, but I know in the cinematic universe, it's like, but a blink of the eye.
Whoa. Yeah.
And they're staring across a crowd, like, you know, it's just, when they say the eyes are the window to the soul, like, that's the kind of movie scene where you see how that can be true.
Absolutely.
But Star is actually involved in the local
gang, if you will.
Who is also, because this is a horror movie, a gang of vampires. And they also, it's vampires on motorcycles.
Yes.
And this is also why I was stoked to watch this film, because I am a new motorcycle rider. And so I'm watching and I'm just drinking it all in, wishing I were any one of these boys on their motorcycles, really feeling all types of way, like, a motorcycle is really like a man and his dog, you know, it's like that's
totally
that boy and his motorcycle.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
And in one of the opening scenes, the family is like kind of like bumping down this dirt road towards the female actress's
Diane West.
Her dad's house is where they're headed. That's where they're gonna like kind
that's
of make their
moving.
New home for a minute. And that guy, I'm very familiar with him because he's the grandfather in my Gilmore Girls rewatch for the fourth time. In the movie, his name is Max, I think, but his actual name is
Barnard Hughes.
Perfect.
Would not have known that off the top of my head. I'm looking it up.
I know, but like I see him on Gilmore Girls daily. Yes. Anyway, so they're bumping down this dirt track road, and Michael is riding his like red, like, I don't even know what kind of motorcycle it is, but it's an 80s little, like,
so cute.
So cute. And I'm watching, I'm like, is the cast member actually riding the bike? That's one thing. I'm like, I know how to ride a bike. Now I'm like going to watch his little feet,
does
his little hands
real?
To see if he's actually, he's for certainly riding.
Yes.
And I want to say that I think most of the cast members are riding actually throughout the whole movie.
Amazing.
And then I learned in my research afterwards that I think it was the character or the cast member who played Michael who broke his arm doing a wheelie on his motorcycle prior to filming, or like maybe during, but I think prior to filming, and had to wear a glove on his hand the entire film.
That's why he looks
hide.
So cool.
But they also reworked his motorcycle so that it could be fully operated with his left hand.
Whoa.
And I was like, that's really impressive.
That is
frankly.
Impressive. Yeah. Riding lefty.
But famously, motorcycles require like every part of your body
you
doing
need all of
two
it.
Different things. Yeah. It's very complicated.
Oh my God.
So I was
so
very
cool.
impressed. But it's a really good film, honestly.
It's so good.
I'm kind of surprised it wasn't more part of my lexicon as a kid growing up, because it really does feel like it's got cult classics. But in some ways that other, like, quote-unquote cult classics will still have something about them that maybe isn't as ideal as whatever. But, like, this really felt like...
It's a great movie.
A good movie.
Yeah. I haven't seen it in a long time. This is, like, a really... It's always good to talk to somebody who's watching something for the first time and you're like, oh, wow, like, tell me everything that you're thinking about it, because I haven't watched it in, like, probably 10 years. So I'm so excited.
It's really wonderful the way that it unfolds. I feel like some more recent movies maybe, like, show their hand a little bit too much or kind of, like, lead you through what they want you to know or something.
Totally.
But this kind of movie was like, oh, and now we're kind of worried for... the person who's getting a little bit too invested in the vampire gang.
Yep.
And, oh my God, is the little brother going to be the one who has to, like, pull him out? Oh no, the script is flipping a little bit.
Yes.
It's kind of, it's like, it unfolds in such a nicely told story
mm-hmm.
way that you're really just, like, down for the ride the whole
yeah.
time, which I love.
So fun. I know, it's such a good, like, it's rare that you have a movie that is able to keep such immaculate vibes that are so fun and yet also have, like, a really well-paced, like, well-plotted story that's really easy to follow. And, like, having both of those things together is such a delicious treat, which is why I'm also always saying they don't make movies like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so fun.
And the soundtrack is really good.
Yeah, bangers.
Yeah. Classics and bangers.
Ugh.
My last thought about the County Fair kind of, like, element of the whole
mm-hmm.
thing is, like, I recently also went to my first, like, moto rally where
yes.
I rode for the first time on my motorcycle among other people on motorcycles. And the way that you all kind of, like, descend upon a, like, site or, you know, if you're stopping at, whether it's just a gas station or, like, we are going to this cafe for whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, any number of bikers kind of, like, all pulling up at once or departing at once is such a sort of, like, specific power
yeah.
move. And
totally.
Also, like, scene, and they really like that combo with doing that at a fair. Like,
so good.
Oh my,
yes.
If I saw a bunch of, like, hot bikers pull up at the Columbia County Fair, I would lose it.
Like, oh my God, who are they?
It was almost, like, too much
yeah,
at once.
Yeah.
Like, who do you think you are
right.
pulling up on your hot bikes at being hot with your mullets and your one dangly earring?
Oh my God, they all have one dangly earring.
I wanted
earring.
To be them
They're
each so,
so
badly.
Cute. Yeah, it's
anyway,
incredible.
Yeah.
Oh
I
God.
Was surprised that I haven't been to the Lost Boys before.
Oh, welcome. It's never too late. It's never too
and
late to become
a
one of the
And there's a second and a
Boys.
Third.
I've never seen the other two. It's time to watch. It's time to watch.
It's time to watch.
Yeah.
It's time to ride.
It's time to ride, baby. It's time to ride. I just love. Yeah, there's something. The vampire movie is such a good genre on its own, but to combine it with all of these other elements is just delicious. So
like, it's a kind of akin to, like, a Knight's Tale,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, we're gonna do a rock, light rock sort
yeah.
of version of medieval I mean, it just
yeah.
it's ridiculous enough to just work.
It's perfect. It's like, it is also that, again, like, having a serious, well-written story but with this, like, light camp, like, very much in on the joke. It's directed by Joel Schumacher, who famously did the Batmans of the 90s that people love to think are bad but are actually very good like very camp director, like, really fun stuff, extremely delicious
it's
like
really
blood
fun.
Like human blood.
Oh my God, the human blood.
It's there,
the
sure
bottles.
Is a lot of the bottles of blood. It's so fun. Wow, I'm really due for a rewatch of Lost Boys. I will say what I was going to tell you earlier, but I was like, oh, I'll tell you on the air, is that our boss actually revealed to me that you watched The Lost Boys, unfortunately.
No.
He did tell me, and then was like, oh, shoot, I wasn't supposed to tell you. And it's like, yeah, dude, that's the whole idea.
I even said it right before I said
that.
Oh,
he forgot.
Loose lips.
He told me anyway. But it's still a delight to hear. I'm so glad. I think we probably only have time for one more movie, but I'm really excited to tell you about what I watched.
Please.
So, well, just to get it out of the way so that nobody asks me later, the third movie I watched was also a worse slasher horror movie than The Funhouse. It was a movie from 1982 called Death Screams. That was about, yeah, it was not very good. It was incredibly fun. Like, a perfect Dead Till Dawn movie, like, very much insanely low budget, just about a bunch of teens in a small town that there's, like, a mysterious series of murders happening, and when you find out who it is, you're like, who? Why? Why is he killing them? We don't really know. But basically the entire middle section all takes place at a fair, and it's just a bunch of teens having conversations hanging out at the fair, and it's kind of fun. It's, like, kind of sweet. And then it turns into a slasher in the last 10 minutes. Very fun. Very weird. It's not important, though. If you like that kind of movie, you will enjoy it. But what's more important is that I watched a movie simply doesn't have a fair in it. I thought maybe it would because it's about a sesquicentennial celebration.
How many years is that?
150?
Okay, sounds about right.
I think it's 150. in Texas.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, it's probably going to be like a fair where there's booths and rides and stuff. There weren't any booths. There weren't any rides. There were events. It's a movie called True Stories that is, let me tell you the year. It's directed by David Byrne of the Talking Heads.
Oh.
I loved it. It was also, I believe, filmed near, are you from, wait, which, what county are you from?
Collin.
It was filmed in Collin County.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
Where was it filmed?
So it was listed, it had at the very end in the credits, it lists all the different counties that they filmed it in, and one was Collin. I wrote it down because I was like, I think that might be where Andy's from. Filmed in Collin, Dallas, Denton, Ellis, Johnson, and Kaufman
counties.
That's
literally all the ones around where I grew
up. Andy, it's time for you to watch True Stories.
Wow.
It's so good. It's incredibly sweet.
Amazing.
So it's from 1986. So I think it is the sesquicentennial because I think it was the founding of Texas, which I think was 1836.
Don't ask me that.
I know. I'm sorry. I was just, there was a big poster or big banner floating above one of the parades in this movie that said 1836 to 1986.
That sounds about right, honestly.
Right, that feels right.
Sorry, previous history teachers.
So sorry. They're not listening. Whoops. They don't know. But so True Stories, if you're not familiar with it, I've been meaning to watch it forever, but I'd never seen it. It's directed by David Byrne of the Talking Heads. It's really sweet. The thing that I like about it is that even though there is no actual county fair in it, it has very much the energy that I was looking for, which is incredibly small town. It takes place in a town called Virgil, Texas. I don't know if that's a real place or if they made it up for the movie.
I bet it's real.
It feels.
I bet there's a Virgil, Texas.
It feels real. But it's so David Byrne plays this character who rides into town in a little red convertible. He's just called the narrator. He's not really given a name. And he is talking about, he's doing a lot of monologuing during the movie, but it's very charming because it's David Byrne. And he's basically here in this little town to celebrate the sesquicentennial. And we meet all of these little townspeople who have their like funny little lives and all of their weird little quirks that they do. And it feels very like kindly satirical of small town America and like specifically like rural America. And it feels both, it's very funny. Like everyone is very goofy and weird, but it is so sweet. Like it's such a hard line to walk to like do something that is satire and kind of like joking about these really weird people, but also doing it in an incredibly warm-hearted way. So like we primarily follow the narrator. He's going to these different areas of the town as they're getting ready for the event, which will culminate in basically a parade and then it's almost like a variety show on a big stage that they build out in the middle of like a big field where there's like some people sing, there's like a band, there's like line dancers, there's like this weird puppet show. There's like, you get to watch the variety show at the end, which is very cute. And it's also essentially like a series of Talking Heads music videos, which is great. It's great. It's every time it happens, I'm like, I'm having a great time. This is so fun. But the other kind of main character who we follow is played by John Goodman, who you would recognize. I was trying to think. I was like, what would Andy know John Goodman from? Did you watch the Flintstones movie that came out when we were kids, like the live action one?
I'm sorry, no.
Okay. Did you ever see The Big Lebowski?
I don't think so.
Oh my God. You would recognize him. I'm like, what would you know John Goodman from?
When I was thinking about being on the radio, I was like, if I had a radio show about movies, I'd have a bit where it was like, how many references until Andy knows who we're talking about?
Literally, I was like racking my brain last. I really thought I was going to get it with the Flintstones. I was like, this is going to do it. Okay, I'm going to show you a picture. Okay. You are going to know who he is.
I get a visual aid. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you know
I
him.
Know from a sitcom with
Roseanne.
Yes.
That's what Josh said Roseanne. You were going to know. I was like, there's no way Andy knows Roseanne.
Yeah, I do know Roseanne, actually.
I'm a fool. I should have gone with Roseanne to begin with. Anyway, I love John Goodman. He's like, there's
Is
some.
Is he dead?
No, okay. He's alive.
Oh, thank God.
I'm like, I don't remember hearing that he died. He is still with us. He's 72.
Now I see the Flintstones.
Yes.
I can see it.
He plays Fred Flintstone.
Yes.
It's just those movies came out when we were kids, so I was like, there's a chance that you saw them. Nope. No dice. But so he is I'm like, what is his job even? I don't know if we ever find out what his job is, but he's just like, he's kind of like a lonely bachelor in this little town, and David Byrne, like, meets up with him a bunch, basically as he's, like, trying to kind of better himself. Like, he goes to a fashion show to try and, like, get some tips and, like, become a more handsome man so that he can meet somebody to love. But joke's on him, because he looks incredible in this movie. He's always, like, dripped out, wearing incredible outfits.
Wow.
Yeah, he looks so good. But so it's, like, it's really the kind of, like, the main arc of the movie is about him kind of wandering around with David Byrne and seeing all of these different things going on while he's trying to find love. And it's so sweet. It's so sweet. But there's also all of these other, like, funny little characters in the town who don't have real names. They just have, like, qualifiers. Like, there's a woman called the Cute Woman who really likes cute stuff. And she's just, like, John Goodman goes to her house to, like, maybe go on a date with her. And her house is just full of very tiny, cute things covered in bows. Mm. And, like, she's just really, that's what she's into, is cute stuff. And then there's also a woman called the Lazy Woman, who's a woman who's just in bed all the time. And she has, like, a little machine that feeds her. And, like, she's not disabled or anything. She just, like, lives in her bed. It's very cute. And we get to see her experiencing things on TV. So she, like, watches all of the events on TV. And then we get to see her reaction to them. But it has, like, it's this very funny episodic movie where there isn't really a plot. It's just about these different characters in this little town all getting ready for this big event. And so you get to see the way that their, like, lives kind of intermingle without it having any kind of, like, there's not, the drama is so small and so interpersonal, but it's in that way, it feels really resonant of the county fair, where it's like everyone is just living their own little lives, but they all happen to be connected by this event that's happening around them. And it just is so, it's so, like, warm. It's just incredibly sweet, but also, but again, like, very satirical. Like, it feels like these people are very funny and weird, and so, like, watching them have their funny little weird lives, you're like, what are you guys doing? Like, but it's just, it's not mean at all. It feels so sweet. The other thing that I was like, okay, it's fine that this doesn't have a county fair in it, is because there is, like, a random scene where a bunch of kids all wearing 4-H shirts walking a goat randomly through a scene, and they, like, sing a little song and then they leave. And I was like, great, the fair.
Absolutely counts.
100%. I was like, definitely. They're part of the fair. The 4-H is here.
Yep.
Like, it's happening.
No, that does really remind me of one of the biggest, like, fair moments when I lived near the Columbia County Fair, mm-hmm. where the neighbors between me and, like, basically where the fairgrounds were, who we never saw, would have their annual fair party.
Yes.
And then suddenly they would have, like, 30 friends, like, cars crisscross parked in their lawn,
totally.
Like, a 3-day-long party. And I'm like, we're all just living our little lives.
It's incredible. It's, like, it's, there's something really humanizing about it, even though, obviously, like, we're all people, but, like, you just see people at the fair that you never see elsewhere, and you're like, oh, you're like, we are the same, actually. We do have something in common. Like, it's really beautiful. It's, like, very sweet. But yeah, True Stories is great. Would strongly recommend. There's, like, a scene very early on where a bunch of people all lip sync Wild Wild Life in a club, and it, like, made me cry a little bit. It's like, it really, it's like, I don't know why. There's just something about it that really, it's so sweet. It's incredible. But I was like, I gotta watch the Texas movie because Andy's from Texas.
Wow. You really, I'm sure it would look all very familiar.
Yeah. It's also just very beautifully shot. Like, lots of big open fields. David Byrne driving his little red convertible down these, like, beautiful dirt roads.
Yeah.
So stunning. Gorgeous. But yeah, that's True Stories. And here we are at 7:58.
Wow.
Incredible timing.
Nailed it.
That's, you know, welcome, Andy.
Can I have one last shout out about fairs in general?
Yes.
I didn't find this reflected in movies at all. That's why I'm bringing it up outside of that.
Yes.
Just a special shout out to the, like, husband calling competitions,
yes.
that I get shown videos of annually, it seems like.
100%.
About people calling their husbands,
yes,
in,
dude.
From wherever, field,
oh,
yard, barn, shop,
it's
garage.
So good.
Those make my year.
It's such a really special
if
thing.
You don't know what we're talking about, do yourself a favor, look up, I think they're husband calling.
I think it is called husband calling. You're 100% right. Yeah.
Highly recommend. That's
so
my last
good.
Shout out of the
That's
fair.
A perfect shout out here at 7:59. Oh, it's so good. That's what True Stories, like, captures that essence. It doesn't have that specifically, but, like, there's a during the variety show, there's dueling auctioneers who who just,
oh my god,
auctioneer at each other while there's a guy behind them lassoing. It's so good.
Oh my god.
It's so good. Ugh, I love the fair.